Who'll take me in? There must be millions of unwanted Chinese girls like me in Shanghai. I imagine Yang introducing me to a strange man and ordering me to marry him. The thought filled me with horror and fear. Weeks before Big Sister's wedding, gifts started arriving at our house. Yang carefully sorted them out and kept the best ones for herself. 3 days before the wedding, Grandaunt personally entrusted a special small package wrapped in gold foil to Aunt Baba to hand to Big Sister. On opening the elegant leather case in Aunt Baba's room, Big Sister found a lovely pendant made of antique imperial green jade hanging from a heavy gold chain. She immediately put it on and gasped with pleasure while she admired herself in the mirror. Then she begged Aunt Baba and me not to mention Grandaunt's gift to a soul, obviously intending to keep the pendant without telling Niang. The wedding was a formal and brilliant affair with a banquet for 500 in the Grand Ballroom on the 9th floor of the Cathay Hotel at the junction of the Bund and fashionable Nanjing Lu and overlooking the Huangpu River. The room was filled with masses of fresh flowers, and the Chinese character for double happiness was outlined in red blooms against the wall. Big Sister was elegantly dressed in a beautiful pink qi pao and silver shoes, while Samuel wore a tuxedo. Two professional radio comedians acted as masters of ceremonies. I had nothing to wear but an old pink qi pao that had been handed down by Big Sister when she grew out of it. Though I didn't look particularly nice, at least I didn't stand out and no one noticed me. My three older brothers, however, were having a horrible time. For this special occasion, Father had ordered them to have fresh haircuts. My brothers' heads were shaved cleanly so that not a trace of hair remained. They were wearing identical dark blue traditional long Chinese robes with high collars and cloth buttons. As soon as they stepped into the foyer, I saw some boys their age pointing at them and snickering behind their backs. When they entered the main ballroom, one of the boy guests who recognized them from St. John's immediately called out to another across the room. "Hey, it's kind of dark in here. Thank goodness three light bulbs have just walked in. With them around, there's no need for lamps."
"No, those aren't light bulbs. They're enlightened, that's all. These are three new monks who have seen the light. They've taken the vow of chastity and abstinence. From now on, they'll eat tofu only."
Everyone doubled up with laughter. I cringed on behalf of my brothers. Their dilemma was compounded because all the other guests were very fashionably dressed. Men and boys wore dark Western suits. Women were bejeweled and in silk qi paos or formal Western gowns. Fourth brother had his hair cut in the latest page boy manner. He looked very smart in a brand new navy jacket with sharply creased matching trousers, white shirt, and necktie. Little sister wore frilly red satin dress and had ribbons in her hair and jade bracelets on her wrists. Toward the end of the banquet, I went to the bathroom. While I was inside one of the stalls, I heard one woman remark to another about the different treatment received by father's two sets of children from his two wives. Immediately afterward, two other women entered. They were chatting and laughing, and I recognized Grandaunt's distinct Ningpo accent. I was about to emerge and greet her when I heard the other woman answer. It was Niang. A chill went down my spine. I felt guilty, though I had done nothing. I kept as still as a mouse and dared not move. The longer I stayed, the more impossible it became to come out. Grandaunt was complimenting Yang on her jade ring, telling her it had the same translucency as the jade pendant she had asked Aunt Baba to hand to Big Sister as a wedding present. In a few sentences, Niang already found out everything, without revealing that she had been kept in the dark about the gift. Hearing this, I was more nervous than ever, and stayed motionless in my stall until long after they had left. I knew my sister would get into big trouble if I didn't warn her, so I waited until I saw her going by herself into her dressing room, which was a storeroom that had been emptied out and set aside for her to change her clothes. I told her of the conversation I had overheard between Grand Aunt and Niang. Tears came to her eyes, and she patted me fondly on my head. "I'll never forget this kindness on your part. Thanks for the tip-off. You're the best sister in the world, and I'll always be indebted to you." For the first time, she was kind to me, and I felt very close to her. Later, I saw Big Sister and Niang walking toward the balcony and talking privately just before she and Samuel left for their honeymoon. Was she able to explain it all away? I hoped so. I only wished I could have helped her more. Next morning, Third Brother told me he had been playing hide-and-seek on the balcony of the Cathay Hotel after the wedding banquet when he overheard Big Sister and Niang talking. He had been hiding behind a large potted plant and could hear them very plainly. In a tone full of regret and self-reproach, Big Sister was confessing about something on her conscience, which did not permit her to remain silent any longer. Although Aunt Baba had sworn her to secrecy and advised her not to reveal to Niang Grand Aunt's wedding gift of a jade pendant, she had decided to ignore Baba's instruction because her aunt was being selfish and dishonest. Besides, the piece of jade would be a perfect match for Niang's favorite jade ring, and she begged Niang to accept it. In one stroke, Big Sister had endeared herself to Niang while simultaneously denouncing Aunt Baba. Touched by Big Sister's honesty and generosity, Niang immediately allowed her to keep the jade pendant. Promising to be forever loyal to Niang, regardless of Baba's sedition, Big Sister swore Niang to secrecy, thus remaining in the good graces of both, while driving the wedge even deeper between Niang and Aunt Baba. She then left on her honeymoon in an excellent mood, wearing her beautiful jade with a clear conscience. Chapter 13. A Birthday Party. As soon as we went back to school after the summer holidays in September 1948, Wu Chun-mei began begging me to go to her house to celebrate her birthday.
"Remember the duckling you used to have a long time ago that we nicknamed PLT?" she reminded me. "Whatever happened to it?"
"She died," I replied rather brusquely. PLT's tragic fate was a secret locked in my heart, together with all the other unspeakable things I hated to think about. It was certainly not something I wished to share, let alone with someone as nice as Wu Chun-mei. She would never be able to understand. I thought of Big Sister's jade pendant and her lies about Aunt Baba, and longed to disclose to my friend all that was buried within. What if I were to suddenly blurt out, "If my stepmother forces me into an arranged marriage like my sister's, and I run away from home, will you take me in?" Would she be shocked? Meanwhile, Wu Chun-mei was saying,
"No wonder you don't speak of PLT anymore. Well, for my birthday, my parents said they'll give me a pet of my very own if I promise to take care of it. They took me to the pet shop last week, and I saw the most adorable puppy. For me, no other pet can ever replace PLT. I interrupted rudely, because, for a moment, I thought I was going to cry. Besides, I continued with a shrug, as if I had not a care in the world, I'm scared of dogs. They bite.
This one won't. It's a little pug with big eyes and a tail that stands up. Oh, do come and see it. Mama says you can come any time that's convenient to you. It doesn't have to be on the day of my birthday. Just give her a few days' notice. You've never been to my house before, and I have so many dolls and books to show you. Please say you'll come.
I couldn't very well tell her I was forbidden to visit any of my friends, ever. For a whole week, I kept making all sorts of excuses, but she was persistent. It became increasingly difficult because, inside, I was simply dying to go. Suddenly, Teacher Wong informed us that next Tuesday would be a special school holiday because it was the name day of our new Mother Superior. Teacher Wong said we were lucky because all the other school children in Shanghai would still have to go to school that day. At first, I was disappointed because I'd much rather go to school than stay home. Then Wu Chunmei asked me again at recess to go play at her house. On a whim, I told her, "How about next Tuesday? Instead of going to school, I'll go to your house and celebrate your birthday." As soon as I said this, I felt scared and wanted to back out. But Wu Chunmei was already jumping up and down with glee. The next day, it became even more impossible to change my mind because her birthday party had grown to include 6 other girls.
"They're all coming because you said you'd come," Wu Chunmei exclaimed. "It's going to be a very special occasion, starting at 8:30 and ending at 3:30. My mama says she'll get out of the house so we can play in the living room by ourselves. I can't wait to show you my new puppy and my doll collection. Papa bought me a doll at every city he visited when he was studying in America."
The 8 of us held a council and carefully made our plans. We'd all dress in our school uniforms and gather in front of our school at 8. Wu Chunmei's driver would meet us there and drive us to her home. We felt very grown up and conspiratorial. I could hardly sleep the night before the party. On Tuesday morning, I put the silver dollar Aunt Baba had given me for leading my class the previous term in my pocket and walked to school with my school bag as quickly as possible. Wu Chunmei's chauffeur was already there. We piled into Dr. Wu's big American car, giggling all the way, and spent a wonderful morning playing with dolls, admiring Wu Chunmei's puppy, eating watermelon seeds, skipping rope, and shooting basketballs into a hoop erected by Dr. Wu in his garden. I was watching Wu Chunmei dribble the ball and admiring her shot sailing through the air into the net when her maid came out to summon us for lunch. It was 12 o'clock. I remembered with a sudden lurch who I was and where I was. For a few hours, I had been a normal little girl, attending a birthday party at her classmate's house. This was strictly prohibited, and I had broken Yang's rules. If she found out, the consequences would be disastrous. We walked toward the dining room, and everyone rushed off to the bathroom to wash. I placed a restraining hand on Wu Chunmei's arm and whispered, "I have to go home for lunch. They're expecting me. I'll be right back." By 1948, American sea rations had run out, and I was to go home for lunch. I was given tram fare for the round trip at noon. Wu Chunmei protested,
"Look what Mama has ordered the cook to make. You can't go now," she murmured.
Laid out on the dining table were steaming baskets of meat-filled dumplings and bowls of noodles topped with barbecued pork and scallions. In the center was an enormous birthday cake, colorfully decorated and piled high with whipped cream and 11 red candles.
"I really can't stay, but I'll be back as soon as I can."
"All right. What's your phone number?"
Without thinking, I replied,
"It's 79281.
"Don't look so disappointed.
I'll be back before you cut your cake."
"We'll wait for you."
I ran home as fast as I could. The hall clock showed 12:09 as I dashed upstairs to use the bathroom. Normally, I would have arrived home at around 12:30. Wu Chun Mei's house was much closer than my school, and I had overestimated the time. Never mind. Better too early than too late. It just meant I'd have some time afterward to buy her a birthday present with my silver dollar. Bursting into my room in the highest spirits, I came face to face with Niang. She was standing by my desk in the bright sunshine, sleek and flawless, in a brown dress covered with black spots. Her appearance reminded me of a leopard lying in wait. My heart was pounding, and blood was rushing into my temples and ears, beating over me in waves. A voice inside my head kept repeating, "Be careful. Be careful."
"Good morning, Niang,"
I greeted her tremulously, fingering the silver coin in my pocket and wondering where to hide it. My tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth, and I could hardly swallow.
"Why are you home so early?" she asked suspiciously.
"They let us out a little early," I answered.
She said nothing, but continued to look at me unblinkingly, obviously expecting more of an explanation.
"From school, I mean,"
I added stupidly, flipping the coin from one side to the other in my sweaty palm.
"What's that in your pocket?"
she demanded, as if she could see through my uniform.
"Nothing,"
I lied, squirming like a worm and wishing I could disappear.
"Come here," she commanded.
I approached her slowly, shaking like a leaf. She patted my body to search me, put her hand in my pocket, and extracted the silver coin.
"Who gave you this?"
There was a prolonged silence. As I desperately searched for a plausible reply, all I heard was the buzz of a fly banging persistently against a window pane.
"I am asking you a question,"
she reminded me angrily.
"Where does this come from? I order you to answer me now."
My brain was whirring, but nothing came to mind. I looked dumbly at her cold, beautiful face. What could I tell her without implicating my aunt? I felt as trapped as the fly whizzing around from pane to pane.
"Why are you home so early, you sneaky little liar? And where did you get this money?"
My silence was infuriating her. She took it as a personal insult, as if I were trying to provoke her. Her face suffused with rage, she slapped me. I felt dizzy, and my ears hummed, but I continued to stare at her in petrified silence.
"Until you give me the true explanation of what is going on," she commanded, "you will have nothing to eat or drink. I always knew no good would come of you."
I opened my mouth.
I found the coin somewhere.
I lied vaguely, squirming around and hating myself. Inside, I was in complete turmoil, with but one thought. I must not betray Aunt Baba.
"Did you steal something from the house and pawn it, you little thief?"
I was considering admitting to theft as a way out when we both noticed the new maid, Ah Sun, standing timidly at the door.
"Excuse me, Yun Tai Tai."
She cleared her throat nervously.
"There is a telephone call."
She nodded in my direction.
"For her."
A new chasm had opened, and I felt faint. I knew at once that Wu Chun Mei must have become tired of waiting for me to cut her cake. I kicked myself for carelessly giving out my telephone number. Niang hurried down to answer the phone in the stairway landing. With a sickening feeling in the pit of my stomach, I heard her voice, now utterly transformed.
"My daughter is busy right now. This is her mother speaking. Who is calling, please? And can I give her a message?"
There was a short pause.
"Waiting for her to cut your birthday cake. How nice. Where is this celebration taking place?"
Another pause. "But don't all of you have to be at school today?"
"Oh, I see. A special holiday. How splendid for you. I'm afraid my daughter will not be returning to your party this afternoon. Don't wait any more."
She came back and glared at me with scathing contempt. "Not only are you a liar and a thief, but you are manipulative as well. Nothing will ever come of you. The problem is that you have bad blood from your mother. You don't deserve to be housed and fed here. Girls like you should be sent away. You don't belong in this house." A shiver of ice ran through me. I felt my world crashing. "You are to stay in your room without anything to eat until your father comes home," she commanded. Disgraced and miserable, I sat alone in my room, looking down at Jackie restlessly pacing the garden. Time went by. I heard the sound of laughter and the clink of plates and cups drifting up. Afternoon tea was being served to fourth brother and little sister in their room immediately below, which we had nicknamed the antechamber. A while later, fourth brother appeared on his balcony, carrying a plate of assorted goodies he no longer fancied. I watched him toss sausage rolls, chicken sandwiches, and chestnut cake with nonchalance to a delighted Jackie, who jumped to catch the morsels between his powerful jaws. I drooled with hunger and longing as I imagined the delicacies sliding down my throat. Finally, I sat there with my eyes tightly shut, wishing with all my heart that when I opened them again, I would be Jackie, and Jackie would be me. Later, after Father returned home from work, he came into my room in a towering rage with a dog whip Hans, the dog trainer, had given him the past Christmas, looped around his arm. When he questioned me, I could not lie. He ordered me to lie face down on my bed, and he whipped me. As I lay there, trembling with pain and shame, I saw a rat scurrying across the floor, its eyes bright and alert, and its long tail trailing behind. I almost screamed out in terror, but bit my lip and remained silent throughout the punishment. "Unfortunately," Father announced,
Your aunt is a bad influence. She gives you money behind our backs and continues to spoil you. I'm afraid you two will have to be separated. I looked up at him in utter desolation. The fabric of my life was about to be torn apart. My heart felt heavy with the most excruciating pain. But he merely relooped the whip over his arm and walked out. Chapter 14, Class President.
What happened to you yesterday?
Wu Chunmei whispered as we took our seats in the classroom to begin our lessons.
We waited and waited for you to cut the cake, only to find out from your mother that you weren't coming back.
My face was still smarting from Niang's slaps. Was it my imagination, or was my friend looking at me strangely? I couldn't help wondering if my face was bruised or swollen. Did she suspect something? I opened my book and hid behind it as I muttered,
"Sorry, my mother wanted me to help around the house. You know how mothers are."
I was searching desperately for a plausible excuse when Teacher Wang inadvertently came to my rescue.
Yan Junling,
Wu Chunmei, stop talking at once and start paying attention, she commanded in a loud voice. Now, I want all of you to listen carefully. Tomorrow is a very special day because it is election day. Tomorrow is the day when you will cast your votes to choose your class president. Do you remember what your headmistress told you at General Assembly 2 weeks ago? To refresh your memory, she has instructed me to read that part of her speech again. Being class president of your grade, the sixth form, is a rare honor. To begin with, this year will be your final year at Shengxin Primary School. On graduation, most of you will go on to the first form at Aurora Middle School next door. Yours is the only class permitted to elect its president democratically, the same as in the United States of America. The head girls of all the lower grades are chosen by their form mistresses. Only in your form, the sixth and highest form, do we allow a free election to be held. Instead of suggesting names to you, we grant you the right to nominate your own candidates. The winner will be president not only of your class, but the head girl of our entire school. The election will be held in our classroom during the first period tomorrow. I have brought some colored balloons and large sheets of scrap paper. During recess and for 1 hour after school today, you are permitted to stay in your classroom and blow up balloons or work on your campaign posters if you so desire. Let this be your first experience of democracy in action. On hearing this, Wu Chunmei and I looked at each other with dismay. When our headmistress had first made the announcement 2 weeks earlier, my friend had immediately nominated me as a candidate and volunteered to be my campaign manager. However, her birthday had driven all else from our minds, and we had forgotten all about it. Unfortunately, Chun Lei, our chief rival, had not forgotten. Her father was a military general in the Nationalist Army. She came to school every morning in a chauffeured black Cadillac, complete with bulletproof glass, escorted by an armed white Russian bodyguard. Between periods, Chun Lei handed out chocolate bars, beef jerky, pencils, and bookmarks to the whole class. I, of course, had nothing to give to anybody, not even to Wu Chunmei. During recess, Teacher Wang wrote on the blackboard in big characters, "Tomorrow is free election day for class president. Come and cast your votes."
We blew up balloons and hung them from window ledges and overhead light fixtures. We wrote giant characters with brush and ink on huge posters. Victory, democracy, free vote, and stuck them to the walls. Our classroom looked festive. We were proud when we saw the lower formers gawking enviously through the window.
When the bell rang at the end of our last class, Wu Chunmei said, "Yan Junling,
you'd better make a speech before everyone goes home. Teacher Wang said we could stay for 1 hour after school. Now is your chance."
I was nervous, but I knew I had to seize the opportunity. So I said okay. Wu Chunmei climbed onto her chair and made an announcement. To our amazement, everyone stayed to listen, including Teacher Wang. I tried to keep calm, but my mouth felt dry and my heart was pounding as I changed places with Wu Chunmei and stood on her chair.
"Fellow classmates," I began. "Wu Chunmei has nominated me as a candidate for class president. She doesn't know this, but I think she should be the candidate instead of me. Not only is she a natural leader and a superb linguist, she's also our school champion in shuttlecock, ping pong, and badminton. Compared to her, I am truly a nobody. My only attribute is that I have never been absent from school in the 5 years I've been coming here. The reason for this is because I love my school and prefer to be here than anywhere else in the world. If Wu Chunmei is elected, I shall try to persuade her to donate some of her old books so that we can start a school library where we can go and read if we feel like it." There was applause, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw Chun Leilei preparing to make her speech. I got down from my chair and whispered to Wu Chunmei, "I'm sorry, but I have to go home now. I've already stayed longer than I should. My mother will be very angry if I'm late."
"What's this about me being class president all of a sudden?" Wu Chunmei asked.
"I meant every word I said. You deserve it more than anyone else."
"We'll see about that. But do you really have to go? Can't you stay for another half hour?"
"I wish I could. You have no idea how much I would love to stay."
I had a sudden vision of Niang in her brown leopard dress, lying in wait for me in my room, and felt breathless with terror.
"I'm so sorry. I simply can't stay any longer."
Something in my voice touched her.
"All right," she said.
But as I hurried out with my school bag, she added,
"Don't worry. I'll win this thing for you. Afterward, let's have a party in my house to celebrate. Mama says we still have a lot of cake left over from my birthday."
I was so scared of being late, I ran all the way home. On entering the back door, I saw Ah Sun chopping vegetables in the kitchen. She stopped when she saw me and asked me to bring a thermos flask of hot water to my Aunt Baba.
"Is she home already?"
I asked, delighted and surprised.
"Yes, she came back early. This water has just boiled and is piping hot. Wait here while I fill the flask so you can bring it up to her for me."
I crept upstairs with the thermos flask and my school bag. Aunt Baba was sitting in an easy chair facing the garden, knitting. I put everything down quietly by the door, then tiptoed softly behind her and clapped my hands over her eyes.
"Boo!"
"Silly girl. I've been waiting for you."
"Yuya and I have just been talking about you.
I came home so late last night, we didn't have a proper talk.
What did your father say to you yesterday, after he whipped you?
I looked at her lined, careworn face, her kind eyes peering out from behind thick glasses, and her straight black hair combed back into a bun with white strands above her ears. Somehow I found it difficult to tell her. Besides, I didn't really want to remember his words.
Nothing. He didn't say much.
I busied myself pouring us each a cup of hot water.
Close the door and come sit by me. I have to do my homework.
She smoothed my hair as I sat down at my writing table and set out my books.
Tell me what your father said.
I just told you. He said nothing. Look, leave me alone and let me do my arithmetic, okay? I must study. It's very, very important.
Why are you getting angry?
I don't know, I exclaimed in a loud, agitated voice. I want to forget about everything that goes on here. I love my school. There I have friends. There I have fun. We sit together and discuss books and things. My friends respect me. My teachers like me. They've nominated me for class president. Tomorrow is election day. Please, don't ask any more questions.
There was a knock on our door and Yuya entered. He regarded me with dismay as I lowered my head in shame at my outburst. I thought he would scold me, but instead he turned to Aunt Baba.
Let her study. She won't disappoint you. When you've reached my age, you know which children are weak and which are strong. Don't ask her too many questions. Don't criticize her or tear her down. I don't want her to grow up like Big Sister. She is going to be different.
The next day started off with a bang. We couldn't wait to cast our votes. Although Teacher Wong had written the names of the 5 nominated candidates on the blackboard, I knew my only true rival was Chun Lele. The others were simply too disorganized. Teacher Wong placed a large cardboard box on her desk. She passed out small sheets of paper on which we each wrote the name of our chosen candidate. One by one, we walked up to insert our ballots into a slit in the middle of the box. After all the votes were cast, Teacher Wong shook the box and read out each name while we tallied the total in our notebooks. Chun Lele, who had the best handwriting and led the class in calligraphy, was ordered to write the number of votes against each candidate's name on the blackboard. The results were close, but in the end it was really Wu Chun Mei who won the election for me. Because of her athletic ability, she was very popular. Everyone wanted Wu Chun Mei on her team. By endorsing me instead of campaigning for herself, she had been able to sway many who were undecided. Because she and I united and formed a team, we consolidated our votes and won. All day we reveled in our success. Though I was a little fearful that Wu Chun Mei would again mention the party at her house after school, she said nothing more about it. I walked home as soon as school was let out. It was a beautiful afternoon, sunny and cool. Avenue Joffre bristled with trams, cars, rickshaws, and pedicabs. The jagged leaves on the giant sycamore trees lining the boulevard were turning russet and golden brown in the autumn sunshine. I felt on top of the world as I bounced along the pavement, running and skipping now and then from sheer exuberance. What did it matter that I was a disgrace to my parents? How could anyone full of bad blood be elected class president? What was bad blood anyway? Nyang predicted a hopeless future for me. Father said nothing would come of me. In spite of this, my classmates had chosen me as their chief representative. In her speech, Teacher Wang congratulated me on my triumph in our first election. Democratically and honestly held, just like in America, the greatest country in the world. As she spoke, I thought, though my parents tell me I'm worthless, I've proved them wrong. Of all the girls in my class, my classmates chose me to be their class president. I must forget about my home. In my other life, my real life, I'm not worthless. They respect me. As soon as I entered my house by the back door, my happiness started to seep away. Cook and Ah Soon were in the kitchen, cleaning a fish for dinner. They hardly looked up when I walked by. I greeted them with the news that I was now the newly elected president of my class. Their very posture reminded me that I was still in disgrace from the birthday party fiasco 2 days earlier. Cook waved me on impatiently, obviously less than impressed by my victory. "Can't you see we've work to do?" he asked brusquely. I climbed the stairs and went into my room. When I closed the door and laid out my homework on my desk, the weight of the rest of the house seemed to slide off my heart. Shafts of sunlight flooded in from the large windows, exposing tiny particles of dust dancing in its wake. I took out my exercise book where the day's votes were tallied, relishing once more the thrill of the contest and the triumph of my victory earlier that morning. Head girl of Shengxin. How sweet life was! In a dreamy trance, I placed some water in the receptacle of my stone writing tablet, grinding a stick of charcoal against its moistened flat surface to make fresh ink. I lubricated my brush and started on my calligraphy. There was a knock on the door, and Ah Soon entered at once without waiting, looking flustered and fearful.
"A crowd of your little friends are downstairs in the living room. They're asking for you," she whispered.
Her words were like a thunderbolt out of a clear blue sky. I stared at her dumbfounded.
"Is my mother home?"
I finally blurted out.
"I'm afraid she is. So is your father." "Tell my friends I'm not home. Please, send them away,"
I begged her desperately. Ah Soon shook her head.
"I tried, but they know you're here. Apparently, they followed you home from school and saw you enter the door. They want to give you a surprise celebration party for winning the election for class president. Everyone has brought a gift. They mean well." "I know."
I felt panic-stricken but had no choice but to follow Ah Soon to the living room. As I crept down the stairs, I could hear the giggles and screams of my classmates resounding through the entire house. I bit my lower lip and forced myself to go in and greet my friends.
They surrounded me, shouting, "Surprise! Congratulations! Victory!" Singing and chanting slogans, drunk with excitement. No one seemed to notice my tongue-tied silence. I shifted my eyes away from everyone else's, afraid that my secret home life was about to be exposed. Inside, I was quaking with terror, hoping against hope that Nyang would leave us alone until I could politely ask my friends to leave.
Ah Soon reappeared and touched me on the arm.
"Your mother wishes to see you now."
I fought against the panic surging within and forced a stiff smile into my face.
"I wonder what she wants,"
I said with a shrug, hating myself for the pretense.
"Excuse me for a moment."
My mind was blank when I knocked on the door of the Holy of Holies. My parents sat side by side in a little alcove overlooking the garden. I tried to close the door after me, but Nyang told me to leave it open. I stood in front of them with my head hanging and my eyes fixed on Nyang's red silk slippers. I could hear, indeed, we could all hear, the gleeful squeals of a dozen merry 10-year-old girls echoing through the entire house.
"Who are these little hooligans?" Nyang began, her voice seething with anger. "Making such a racket in the living room downstairs."
"They're my friends from school."
"Who invited them here?"
"No one."
"What are they doing here?"
"They came to celebrate my winning the election for class president."
"Is this party your idea?"
"No, Nyang."
I shook my head.
"They came of their own accord. I didn't know anything about it."
"Come here," she screamed.
I approached her gingerly, trembling with terror. She slapped my face so hard I almost fell.
"Liar! You planned it, didn't you? To show off our house to your penniless classmates. How dare you?"
"No, I didn't."
Tears streaked down my cheeks, and I found it hard to breathe.
"Your father works so hard to feed and clothe all of you. He comes home for a nap, and there's not a moment of peace. What insolence to invite them into our living room and make such a racket."
"I never asked them here. They know I'm not allowed to go to their houses after school, so they decided to visit me instead."
She slapped me with the back of her hand against my other cheek.
"Show off! I'll teach you to be so sneaky!" she screamed. "Go downstairs this minute and tell your hooligan friends to get out. They are not welcome."
As I hesitated and shuffled my feet, she hit my face yet again.
"Do you hear me?"
she yelled at the top of her voice.
"I want them out of the house this minute. Are you deaf? Tell them to Kundan, get lost, and never come here again. Never. Never. Never."
I clenched my fists and made my way slowly down the stairs. An eerie silence now permeated the house. My classmates must have heard Nyang's every word through the open door of the Holy of Holies. My nose and eyes were drenched, and I wiped them with the back of my sleeve. To my horror, I saw bright red blood staining my hand and dress. Drops of blood trickled freely from my nose onto the floor.
I realized that Nyang's blows must have caused a nosebleed, and that my face was probably smeared with a mixture of blood, mucus, and tears. I re-entered the living room and stood in front of my classmates, unable to say a word. I felt naked and ghastly and vulnerable. None of them looked at me, and I dared not look at them. At school, I had been so careful to pretend I came from a loving family. Now they knew the pathetic truth. Unwanted and unloved by my own parents. How long did it take for a person to die of shame? Finally, I choked out to the room at large.
My father wishes to sleep. They want you to go home now. I'm sorry.
No one replied, but in the painful silence, Wu Chunmei took out her handkerchief and handed it to me. I shrugged and tried to give her a smile of thanks, but something in her eyes suddenly made it impossible for me to feign nonchalance. With tears strangling my voice, I told them,
"Thank you for coming. I'll never forget your loyalty."
One by one, they trooped out, leaving their gifts by my side. Wu Chunmei lingered and was the last to go. As she went past the stairway, she shouted toward the Holy of Holies,
"This is unfair! You're cruel and barbaric! I'll tell my father!"
I gathered my presents and hesitated at the threshold of my parents' room, thinking about running away. Their door was wide open. Father ordered me to go in, close the door, and unwrap my packages. Out came a jumbled collection of comics, kung fu novels, a chess set, a jump rope, packages of treats, salted plums, sweet ginger slices, and dried watermelon seeds, and a sheet of calligraphy paper with the character Victory prominently stroked out with brush and ink.
"Throw the whole lot into the waste paper basket," Father commanded.
I hurried to comply.
"Why should your classmates give you gifts?" Nyang asked suspiciously.
"It's because we won the election today. I'm now class president. We worked hard at it."
Nyang interrupted me in the middle of my explanation.
"Stop bragging," she screamed. "Who do you think you are? A princess of some sort? That all your friends should come and pay you tribute? You are getting altogether too proud and conceited. No matter what you consider yourself to be, you are nothing without your father. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing."
"You breached our trust in you when you asked your friends to come here and insult us,"
Father said in a quiet voice that made me grit my teeth in pain.
"Family ugliness should never be revealed in public. Since you're not happy here, you must go somewhere else."
"But where can I go? Who will take me in?"
I asked shakily.
"We're not sure," Father replied cruelly.
Times were hard, and on my way to school in the early mornings, I had seen infants wrapped in newspapers left to die in doorways.
beggar children in rags routinely rummaged through the garbage cans searching for food. Some were reduced to eating bark peeled off the trees lining the street on which we lived.
What's going to happen to me? Will I be sold?
I knelt in front of them in a state of panic.
You don't know how lucky you are to be fed and housed here in these uncertain times, Father said. Apologize to your Nyang.
I apologize, Nyang.
It's your aunt who has taught you to lie and cheat. She feeds your arrogance by giving you money behind our backs, Nyang said. She is an evil influence. Before it's too late, you must move out of her room and not speak to her again.
We'll find an orphanage that will take you in until you're old enough to find a job to support yourself.
Your father has enough to worry about without the likes of you. You can go now.
The thought of being separated from my aunt filled me with dread. Somberly, I climbed the stairs and went back to the room I shared with her, perhaps for the last time. After a sleepless night, I walked to school the next morning feeling apprehensive and ashamed. Along the way, I kept asking myself, what'll my friends say this time? How will my voters look at me? Will I be the laughingstock of my class? Will everyone sneer and whisper about me during recess? I waited in the bathroom for a long time, reluctant to face my peers.